This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin with me, Joyce Goh, and Brian Fernandez with the business stories of the day. We'll start with a bit of breaking news. US President Donald Trump's top economic advisor, Gary Cohen, says he is resigning. And according to Reuters, it's a decision that came after he lost a fight with the White House over plans to impose hefty steel and aluminium tariffs.
So this could be about the whole Donald Trump's comment on trade wars and all that?
Absolutely. In fact, the Republican Party itself is pushing back on the president, saying that while these tariffs are meant to deal with China and its dumping of steel, is in fact going to hurt allies like Canada.
But one of the things also, I mean, analysts have also said he basically made this announcement with a view to the midterm elections just coming up around the corner and a couple of days. So playing to the gallery, so to speak, but so obviously it's backfired within his own camp itself and his party.
Absolutely. Now, let's come back to our shores. We start with news from Sarawak. It will assume full regulatory authority over the upstream and downstream aspects of the state's oil and gas industry by July this year. This was announced last night by the Sarawak Chief Minister, Dato' Patinggi Abang Johari Abang Openg, when he launched Petroleum Sarawak Berhad, or PETROS.
Yeah, sure. You can think of PETROS as Sarawak's own Petronas, right? So it will allow Sarawak to earn its own revenues directly through exploration and in downstream activities, rather than solely relying on cash payments from Petronas. But the announcement will not affect Petronas's ongoing works in Sarawak, which involves 60 oil and gas producing fields.
Yeah, so essentially what it does is it enables, under this agreement, Petronas has, prior to this agreement, Petronas had legal ownership of everything nationwide, all the rights over the oil fields. Now, so Petronas makes cash payments to the federal and states governments such as Sarawak, where petroleum deposits lie. But now, Abang Johari says that those involved in the oil and gas industry in Sarawak must have the necessary permits and approvals required under state laws.
Yeah, and the question, of course, is, you know, in some ways it seems this is a progress on the oil royalty issue between Sarawak and the federal government, stemming from demands for more autonomy from the federal government. But if you remember, this was first brought up in 2014 by the now late Tan Sri Adnan Satim, who was then a chief minister.
Yeah, Sarawak only receives 5% of oil royalties. So after becoming chief minister in 2014, the late Tan Sri Adnan Satim had said had asked for higher oil royalties than the present 5%. So that year, the Sarawak Legislative Assembly unanimously passed a motion to ask for 20% oil royalty.
Yeah, but in an interview in the Edge Weekly in February, Abang Johari said that the question of the 20% does not arise anymore. It was his predecessor that requested it. And he believes that based on the present scenario of low oil prices, it's debatable whether you can still get 20%. Now, if there's a new environment, he said at the time, where PETROS is there, it can become an alternative to the 20%. So the crux is to get additional revenue for Sarawak, right? So that can be through revenue or through other forms.
Now, the question is, what will this mean for PETROS contribution to the federal government's coffers? We just spoke about this on Monday. Petronas' dividend to the government for 2018 is an estimated 19 billion ringgit.
Yeah, so the 19 billion ringgit is 3 billion more compared to last year. So that is Petronas' contributions to the federal government's coffers, right? It's an improvement, but still far off from the 26 billion ringgit dividend paid in 2015.
Yeah, and Joyce, you know what? Oil revenue, one of the things that the government has done really well is it's reduced its dependence on oil revenue to fund the budget. So if you look at 2009, oil revenues contributed 41% of our national budget. Mm. Today, it's only 14%.
So the question is, how important is Sarawak to Malaysia in terms of its overall reserves and production in oil and gas?
Well, data from the Energy Commission shows that at end 2015, Sarawak possessed about nearly 29% of known national oil reserves and accounted for nearly 30% of national production. That's about a third. However, this is dependent on Sarawak's boundaries, right? And it is 3 nautical miles from the coastline, and most of the oil reserves are beyond 3 nautical miles.
And as for gas, what do we have in terms of, do we have any numbers on that?
Yeah, that's 52% of, Sarawak accounts for 52% of the country's known reserves. So essentially, more than half of the country's gas reserves are of Sarawak.
Sarawak. I guess, yeah. So the question is, will this play well for Barisan Nasional in Sarawak, having moved that agenda? In fact, it also raises the question, the politics behind these moves.
Yeah, it seems very timely that, you know, with an election looming around the corner and the Barisan Nasional's fixed deposit being in Sabah and Sarawak, this move is obviously is very, very timely.
I mean, the question of fixed deposit is fascinating because it used to be that you're a fixed deposit, you could be ignored. Your support could be, counted on without really much investment in you. But now that fixed deposit is, as it were, biting back, and it has done so for several years.
You know, guys, it's also important to note that Petros will be active within 2 years. And interestingly, some production sharing contracts in Sarawak will also expire around that time.
Okay, let's move on to the next story, and this has got to do with the Comprehensive and Progressive Agreement for Trans-Pacific Partnership. It is the successor to the TPP. It now goes by a slightly more clumsy acronym, CPTPP. Too many P's in that, I think. P's in a pod, as it were. Okay, so this agreement is going to be signed tomorrow, but Malaysia will not likely be part of the CPTPP's pioneer group that won't benefit from early partnership. Minister of International Trade and Industry, Dato Sri Mustafa Mohamad, told BFM that this is due to Malaysia being required to make 19 legislative amendments to fulfill the partnership agreement, but it's only done one so far.
It's not possible for Malaysia to do all the 18 this year. This session, for example, not a single bill on CPTPP is going to be presented. The last session, end of the year, is a budget session. Very crowded. That's about the budget. So you are left with June, July. And that will be, assuming elections are in May, and then we are going through some transition, housekeeping, those kind of things. So to be realistic, Malaysia is not going to be able to amend 18 laws between now and December.
That was Minister of International Trade and Industry, Datuk Sri Mustafa Mohamad.
Yeah, so what this means is that the amendments will require more time than the remaining 10 months available to benefit from early adoption of the CPTPP.
Yeah, so after years of negotiation, essentially, the original agreement was signed by about 12 countries, including Malaysia, on February 2016. Now, coming back to the CPTPP, it aims to slash tariffs among the 11 members and foster trade to boost growth. Now, given that the US involvement represented 40% of the global economy, its exit from the pact obviously resulted in a drastic downsizing of the original agreement.
So how meaningful is this agreement, the CPTPP, without the US? Do we have any numbers that indicate its impact?
Well, the TPP-11, even without the US, will give Malaysian companies access to a market of 500 million people, Sharad, with a combined output of US $11 trillion. That's about 43 trillion ringgit, and a 15% share of global trade. So that's pretty substantial still, yeah?
Yeah, so of the 11 members of the CPTPP, okay, I've got that right, for it to take effect, at least 50% or 6 countries must make domestic amendments to complete the ratification process. So that's important. I mean, that's why Topa brought that up as well. So you heard it said earlier, we still have 18 more laws to table in Parliament before we can implement the agreement.
Yeah, so the members, the 11 countries of this CPTPP are, we have Malaysia, Australia, Brunei, Chile, New Zealand, Peru, Singapore, Vietnam, Japan, Canada and Mexico.
Now, last November, the TPP was resurrected and came back to us as a CPTPP minus 20 provisions. And those included intellectual property segments, specific biologics, patent term adjustments, copyrights, which are of particular interest to Malaysia.
Now, interestingly, in Davos this year, Trump told the World Economic Forum that essentially the US might return if it got a better deal. But Japan is skeptical. And again, Japan is the key driver behind this revised deal.
Now, the CPTPP signing comes just a week after Donald Trump says that there is a risk of a trade war. In fact, he welcomes a trade
war. That's right.
And also after he propose high tariffs for imported steel and aluminium. How's this going to be playing out?
Yeah, that's why it's just the timing of the signing and this whole trade war, potential trade war that's brewing. I mean, it's interesting. The EU had also warned that it would respond to what Donald Trump had said with its own 25% tariff to hit about $3.5 billion worth of US dollars of US goods, right? So it's interesting that this is happening. And the World Trade Organization has also directed a warning to Donald Trump, saying that, you know, there are fears of a first full-scale tariff war since the 1930s.
Well, it looks like the war is also ongoing in the White House with the departure of Gary Cohn over precisely this issue.
But interesting, markets believe, and we had our market watch this morning from East Spring Investments, they have the view that essentially the prospects of a full-blown trade war are in fact kind of overblown.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. Remember, when we come back, we'll be looking at the opening numbers on the stock market. We also have an interesting lineup for you in the 9 o'clock hour. We'll have the BBC World Service, and we'll be looking at counting calories. No, this is not a show that will teach you how to lose weight. It is, in fact, a look at government policy and also some of the major stakeholders in the food industry and their initiatives to help us reduce over consumption of calories. And all that's coming up after the 9 o'clock news. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.